Welcome back. It is the afternoon show. Jack Fritz and Ike Reese hanging out at Chickies and Pete's. Baseball is better at Chickies and Pete's. Pre-game, in-game, or a post-game feast. Find a location near you online. ChickiesandPete's.com. Of course, you know, Chickies in the ballpark. Ballpark should be a pretty good crowd tonight. Sixers in action against the Magic. A big game down at the Wells Fargo Center. A lot to get to with Elliott Shore Parks. As always, Elliott Shore Parks calls are brought to you by Robin Ford, online at robinford.com. Robin Ford, where cars and trucks are sold cheap, cheap. What's happening, Elliot?
What up? How you guys doing?
ESP. What's happening, brother?
Excited for this game tonight.
It's
like
a
playoff
one.
game down there.
A playoff atmosphere down here at Chickies today, too. Playoff atmosphere down here at Chickies.
The return of Markelle Fultz.
So, Elliot, we'll get to some Eagles thoughts here in a second. But first off, what's your reaction to the Allen Iverson statue?
Man, so Iverson, as you know, my favorite Philly athlete. So I was very excited for this moment. And I do think it is a good statue. I was team, you know, hand to ear. I would have gone with that. Mm-hmm. But now that I the crossover, I think it makes sense. He's known for the crossover, you know, in the history of the league. He's viewed as one of the people having the better crossovers. So I think there is logic in doing it. I just hate that everyone's clowning it. Like, his moment shouldn't have been like this. The statue is always going to be small. All the statues outside of the facility aren't small. So it feels like this was poorly handled in terms of telling people what to expect. And as a result, it sucks that his big moment is, you know, basically being mocked online for the statue.
Well, they're not mocking him. They're more or less pissed off at the Sixers.
Right, but the statue was always going to be small, is my point.
It looks like you could pick it up, Elliot. I mean, what are we talking about?
Because it's not outside of the arena. The statues we're comparing it to are outside of arena. Fans don't walk by this statue. The statues are small. His is admittedly a little smaller because the other statues people are dunking and shooting. And he's crossing the ball over, so, you know, he's bent over. But, if it was that size outside of the Wells Fargo, then I would agree with you. But it was always going to be a smaller statue. It was not going to be the statue we think of that we walked by outside.
But the other statues are outside the practice facility, like the Barkley statue.
Yeah, they're all small. They're all small.
Not as small as that.
They are.
I think a big point that you're making, or a difference that you're making, is that AI is in a basketball crossover, right, hunched over sort of posture, where the other guys are either shooting a jump shot, they're grabbing a rebound, they're doing something where they're, I don't want to say erected, pause, but they are standing straight up, though. You know, like, you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Like there's a picture of Charles Barkley next to his statue, which is, I believe, next to Iverson's or right close to it. And in his statue, he is jumping and dunking the ball, so his arm is fully extended. Arms are fully extended,
which makes the statue taller.
Yep, exactly. So. Good breakdown. Good. I didn't know you were such a statue.
Well, because we can see Charles, and he's 6'4". Charles is 6'4", and we see him standing next to a statue. His statue is at least 2 feet taller or a foot taller than he is.
Right.
So, what would you say the total height is on this statue?
I mean, if Iverson's 6 foot, maybe, I don't know, 6 foot. 6.5 feet. It's not much bigger than Iverson. It looks like it might even be smaller than him based off the pictures I've seen. But this is what I'm saying. It's disappointing that a day that should be all about how awesome the statue is, it's getting a negative reaction. I guess that'd be my overall take. It's just,
well, how is somebody supposed to look at this and say how awesome it is?
Because it was always going to be this size. That's my point.
Well, we didn't know that.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I wish that.
Oh, well, they went from statue to sculpture very quick, too,
and talking about it. Right. That, exactly. That's the point I'm making. So, yes, and I will say, like, I would have preferred the ear, you know, the hand to the ear. I think the crossover, the step over would have been cool. I understand the crossover, but it's not really an iconic moment for him. It's not, you know, it's not for a player that has so many of them. They could have done a few different things that people would have looked at instantly and gone, oh, yeah, I remember that one.
What do you think about the Sixers team adding them to the postseason? We've been talking a lot at the beginning of the show here of giving this team a clean slate. It's a new version of the team. We don't need to talk about the past transgressions of of Doc Rivers and James Harden and Ben Simmons. What do you think about giving this team a nice clean slate heading into this postseason run?
Yeah, so none of those guys are there. So I think that in that way, it would be a more enjoyable experience. But the main guy is there. And the past playoff failures, the issues of getting out of the second round, he's still on the roster. Like, Joel Embiid is the problem. He is the one people think of when they get mad about they've never been out of the second round. So while I agree that, you know, saying this team has failed in the playoffs a bunch is not fair because it is like almost a really different group, I understand fans are going into the postseason saying, well, it's just going to be the same thing because it's the same player. Much like if a quarterback struggled a bunch of years in a row, we would say, well, as long as they have that quarterback, they're never going to win anything. We say that with Dak, right? So I think that with Joel going into the postseason, he's carrying all this baggage with him. And as the best player, it's hard for the rest of the roster to avoid it.
I look at this team and I say, okay, I know who my main two stars is. Who do you think is more likely going to emerge as the third guy? Is that a feel for every game? Is a different guy every game? Like, who do you think is more likely to be that third guy?
So I think if at the end of the postseason, whenever that ends, we're talking about, man, this guy really stepped up, I think it's Kelly Oubre. I think game by game, there could be big Lowry moments. Batum, I think, is going to be a better fit with Embiid now that Embiid's back. And look, even Buddy is somebody that could, you know, have three threes in a quarter that wins in the game. So I think they have more role players that are capable of having big moments. But over a prolonged stretch, I think Oubre has the best chance of being the guy that steps up. He's not afraid to take big shots. Now, he doesn't always make these three-point shots he takes, but for a team that I've watched in the postseason look hesitant and scared at times, Oubre, I believe, has a confidence to get into these games, thanks a willingness to take the big shot and, like, looking forward to it. So I think that's a positive. But I also...
Yeah, wrong answer. Tobias is the guy.
No, it's not Tobias.
Yeah, it's
Tobias. I would love to hear the argument for Tobias. He's had, what, five chances to be that guy, and he's never been it. So,
well, how many times has Oubre proved that he was that guy in the playoffs?
But he has not been on the team and come up small repeatedly like Tobias has.
But you would agree Tobias has the playoff experience?
He does have the playoff experience. Okay. I agree. Yes. But if you told me who do I have confidence in being the third star going into the postseason, I have no confidence.
Okay, well, I know that. That's most of the city. That's why I wouldn't ask you who you have more confidence in. Right. I expected you to say someone other than Tobias. That was you walking into an answer I wanted you to say so I could just tell you you're wrong.
Okay.
It's going to be Tobias.
Well, why is it going to be Tobias?
Because he's the third most experienced guy. I mean, yeah, third most experienced guy on the team outside of Lowry and Joel Embiid.
Yeah, Lowry.
And yeah, in Joel Embiid, so he's the third most experienced guy, and he's probably going to get the third most shots.
So that's why I think, and you know, tonight I think is going to be a really good indication of how this thing will look, because tonight is A, basically a playoff game, and B, they're fully healthy. I will be curious to see how they use Tobias. I'm assuming he is going to start every game. I'd be very surprised.
Of course he is.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if he didn't start. But I do wonder if he will get those end of game minutes. Like, if the game is close with 8 minutes to go, he's definitely on the court. I'm not so sure. I used to, midway through the season, I would have thought so. But he's been really bad recently. He's a free agent. I don't know if they have that same loyalty to him that they used to. So I'm not as sure as you are that he'll end the postseason third as top. I think there's a chance there's players ahead of him.
Well, I mean, I know he should. I'm just saying I think he should. Now, obviously, if he doesn't play well, they can always have a change of course and action and what they want to do. But he has the experience. He's almost a 17-point game playoff guy in the playoffs. That's nothing to sneeze at. As defenses tighten up, as rotations tighten up, half-court offense becomes more and more important. It's a lot easier to score in free will when you're in the regular season and people aren't necessarily gearing towards stopping you and it's just open-court basketball. Playoff basketball is a little different. So you're going to need somebody that can get their own shot in that half-court.
No, I think that's a good point. Tobias is probably their third best half court scorer. I mean, Lowry, just because he's a veteran, you can make an argument, but I think Tobias is a better half court scorer than Oubre is. I just think Oubre, A, he fits better with this team. He moves on offense. He makes the cuts. He's better on defense. He's a more willing 3-point shooter. So I feel like, while you are right, Tobias if it's an ISO situation, he's probably more likely to get a bucket. I think Oubre is going to be more involved with
fun times.
Oh, the Tobias. This Tobias playoff run is going to be awesome.
Oh, it's going to feed families.
We might only have three more games at Tobias. You have no idea what this thing's
going to
go. Got to get the debate in when you can.
All right, Elliot. We're less than 2 weeks now from the draft. Where do you kind of sit now? What's your gut telling you on what you think Howie Roseman's going to do, you know, this time 2 weeks from now?
I think if Howie had his wishes, he would end the first night with an offensive lineman.
Gosh. Why? Why?
What? All right. Look, last year I was with you on the no offensive lineman. You're wrong this time about
the offensive wrong. Line. I'm not wrong. Does Jeff Allen suck at his job apparently now?
But I think there's this myth that the offensive line is made up of all undrafted players. Lane was a first-round
pick. He's the only first-round pick.
Cam was a second-round pick. Dickerson was a second-round pick. Those are high draft picks.
Sure.
Not as high as a first-round
pick. Tyler Steen was a second-round pick.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, they've had one first-round draft pick that's worked on the offensive line since Trey Thomas.
Yeah, how many have they taken? They've taken Lane and Danny Watkins.
Dillard.
Right? Dillard's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, all I'm saying is that they don't necessarily need to spend. We all think they love to take offensive linemen early in the draft or in the first round. Well, I mean, they might, but they haven't had as much success taking offensive linemen in the first round is the point that I'm making.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. I think in this draft at 22, and we'll see how the board falls. I do think for the Eagles, it is a good draft to be picking late because it looks like a lot of quarterbacks and receivers are going to go early. So they could get to that ninth pick, and it could, you know, legitimately only be quarterbacks and receivers and maybe Joe Alt to tackle out of Notre Dame. So I think players they want at positions they need will fall. But at 22, if you can get a guard that can come in right away, start, and play at a high level, that helps the team. It helps the team more than any other position they would draft. Point blank, period. Their offensive line has a gaping hole at right guard and potentially
it's not a gaping hole.
Yeah, it's not a gaping hole. And we're not saying that they can't necessarily find help through the draft for the offensive line, particularly at the guard spot. We're saying for that position, you don't need to spend a first round draft pick on a guy. You just re-signed your left side of your offensive line. They're going to be here. Your center is about to make his first year as a starter, and it's just his third year. And then your right tackle, who has Hall of Fame potential or likelihood, isn't going anywhere anytime soon. I just don't understand where there's this dire need to take a lineman when there are so many needs on defense. Like, there are so many needs on defense that you can find a guard. It's harder to find a pass rusher that's an effective pass rusher, a corner that's a very good corner versus somebody you hope can be a good player at that position. A guard is easier to find in the draft. You don't need to spend a first-round pick on a lineman, a guard. And if you take a tackle, you're getting – I heard the guys talking about this earlier on the midday show – what, at 22, you're going to get the 7th or 8th best offensive tackle in the draft? So you'd rather have the 7th or 8th best player at that position versus having, I don't know, the 3rd best defensive end, 4th best defensive end, 2nd or 3rd best corner in the draft? You'd rather have the 8th, 7th or 8th best lineman?
Yes. I mean, but again, I think that it's the way you're phrasing it. The 7th or 8th best lineman could be better than the 2nd best corner.
Could be. Right. Could be.
So when they're sitting there at 22, so let's just talk about the corner. Okay. So Kool-Aid McKinstry. I like Kool-Aid McKinstry. He is coming off a foot injury. He's not viewed as super athletic, but I like him. I would be okay with that pick at 22. Mm-hmm. Nate Wiggins. He's probably my favorite corner in the draft. He's undersized, but he plays a lot of man coverage. I would be into that pick. But I don't think either of those guys are special enough prospects where I can get an offensive guard that has the potential to play tackle that I know. So, like, your point is correct that you can find guard play throughout the draft. And, frankly, in free agency, like, Matt Hennessy might be able to play an effective right guard.
How about Cooper DeJean?
Oh, I'm out on him. I'm out. I have no interest in Cooper.
Oh,
I would
not
draft
him. No, you're not a football guy.
You don't want gritty, hard-nosed,
knows
how to play the game?
Any football guy loves Cooper DeJean, man.
No,
come on.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that. I, if I'm
Baldy
corner,
told us the other day he was a stud. I don't know the problem here.
Well, I disagree with Baldy. If I think if you're taking a corner at 22 or in the first round, he has got to be able to play man coverage. He, of all the top corners...
You want Cooley McKinstry compared to James Bradberry. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, first of all, James Bradberry's had an all-pro career. Right now...
James Bradberry had one all-pro season.
Surrounded by nine other Pro Bowlers.
In 2016, he was good,
If they get a player at 22 as good as James Bradberry for his career, then that's been a great pick. So you are right, now James Bradberry is not as good. But obviously throughout his career, he's been a great player. But back to Cooper. Yes. If I'm drafting somebody, I have to know he can play man coverage. He did not do it a lot in Iowa. He did it less than anybody else. So you're projecting there. If you want to talk about taking him at 50 or 53, sure, because he is a great athlete. He can do a bunch of different things. But with Cooper, I don't see one position where I know he can be great at it. And if I'm taking somebody in the first round, you have to be great at one thing. And I don't think he's great at one thing.
That'd be great. You're talking about taking a damn guard at 22. Yeah, how many great guards
guard
come that
draft.
Late in the draft? I don't care how good he is. I don't care how he's the best guard in the draft. That don't mean he's going to be great.
Well, I think the guards that will be available at 22 are better prospects at their position than Cooper is at his position. And while now it's easy to look past right guards, when we get to week three or four and Jalen's running for his life and they can't run the ball with Saquon because the right side of the line is bad, then it's going to matter. So I'm normally with you on the offensive line early, but in this team with this draft, I think it's the right move.
Defense, Elliot. Say it with me. Defense.
Start the chance.
Start drafting defensive players. We don't have, not enough. Not for the future.
Well, they don't have enough offensive linemen either.
They got plenty of
offensive. They got plenty of O-line.
Would you stop?
They don't have plenty of
O-line. Is defensive tackle on the table for you at 22? I know you're all offensive lined up. What about the other trenches? Is defensive tackle on the table for you?
I would take defensive tackle before I would go cornerback as well. I think there's better prospects there. There's a defensive tackle out of Texas that's viewed as an elite pass rushing prospect. He can play in a 3-4. He's extremely strong. He gets after the quarterback. Put him next to Jalen Carter, and everyone's life on the line becomes easier. I like Johnny Duke out of Illinois. I don't like him as much as Brian Murphy, but I do like him, and he is a pass-rushing defensive tackle. We talk so much about the Kelsey replacement. Where's the Fletcher replacement? Like, who do they have?
Jalen Carter.
Yeah, Jalen Carter, but you need someone else. You can't. He's just going to get double-teamed every game if they don't have anybody next to him, and he's going to be ineffective. So I would take a pass-rushing defensive tackle at 22. Before I would take a corner, assuming those two prospects are there. Outside of those two, there's none worthy of that pick. But at 22, if they're on the board, I would take them over the corner.
So we're going to take a defensive tackle for three straight years with our first pick.
Yeah.
Damn.
But
awesome.
What's the problem with that?
They spent
three straight picks on receivers, and now they have one of the best receiving duos in the NFL.
So not in the first round.
Because they also failed at those two. Two of those picks sucked.
No, well, they traded one for AJ, which I know is a little, you know.
You said they drafted three.
No, I said they used three first-round picks.
Would you stop changing everything around?
Okay, I got you.
Don't use your little tricks on me. I'm up on you, Shore Parks.
Well, not really. You were confused there for a few minutes, so I don't think you were that up on.
Are you yelling in the street right now? Are you? Did you figure it out at your house yet?
So I actually just cut the grass, so I'm back in the house.
Oh, I thought you lived in the city.
Yeah, dude, what'd you cut?
Yeah,
quarter?
Grass, yeah.
Well, look, I didn't need the $18,000.
You cut the grass. Did you cut it with scissors? I mean, there's no way you have a yard.
Come on. The more you talk, the less it's clear you know about the city. There are houses in the city with yards. I know you lived here for 4 months.
I have a yard. I live in technically a city, in the borough.
Yeah, your yard is bigger than my yard, but my yard is
That's right.
Cut.
Trust me. That's right. Mine is bigger than yours. Yep.
Yeah, no. Nah.
Okay.
What was your reaction to the Devontae Smith extension stuff that came out the last couple of days?
I was not surprised. I believe Devontae is going to get an extension this offseason. I think that I don't want to say panic, but the, you know, maybe worry.
Well, Jackie is panicking. Yes.
Yeah.
Someone's got to raise the alarms here.
Well, there's no rush, number one. And number two, it's just a more complicated deal. Landon's deal was very clear. Top of the market, 1 year left on his contract. That was an easy contract to do.
Yep.
Devontae, not only does he have 2 years left if they exercise that fifth-year option, but it's also not really clear where Devontae should be. I mean, I believe he has number one receiver potential and skill, but I don't know. If you compare him to what Justin Jefferson or Jamar Chase might get, I think there's an argument for those guys getting more money than Devontae. So I think it's a little more complicated.
Really? There's an argument for that?
Yeah, I think there is. And that's why I think it's a more complicated deal. But I also think from Devontae's perspective, he should ask for what those guys are asking for. He's been, you know, a great player for 3 years. He's young, although he's not been the number one guy. I think he has number one skill. If he went to other teams would probably happily pay him close to.
And that's going to be his bargaining chip right there.
Right.
Yep.
You know, so
it's smart on his part. I said it, Ellie. I said if the Eagles aren't offering him number one wide receiver money, I mean, it may be Devontae that's just saying it's not even worth it for me to sign right now.
I agree with that. And, you know, the other aspect of it is, while I haven't been around Devontae for 3 years, the team he loves being here in Philadelphia, I don't think he's trying to get out.
Sure.
There is an argument for going somewhere and being the number one legit guy, right?
I mean, yes.
So there's that argument. But why I think a deal will get done is because, A, the Eagles really want it to get done. They don't want Devontae to go anywhere. He's a homegrown guy. You know, we talk so much about culture this offseason. I think him being a homegrown culture guy is really important. And two, while Devontae can, you know, think he'll go there or wait for this, if you have $50 million guaranteed sitting in front of you, I don't know how you turn that down. So that's why I believe ultimately a deal will get done.
Final thing, Elliot, surprised the Eagles are favorites over the Packers?
Yeah, I am surprised by that. I mean, the Packers, obviously, I think, going into the season, the Packers are going to be viewed as a better team than the Eagles. I don't think that might not be correct.
I don't know about that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I guess the odds tell you no, because the Eagles aren't favored. But, I mean, with how the Packers ended last season versus how the Eagles ended last season,
right,
I think the Packers are going to be discussed like the Lions were last year, where going into the year, everybody, you know, it was the team. They'll be the team everyone goes, no one's talking about them, but I like the Packers, even though everybody's talking about them. So I think they will be talked about at a higher level than the Eagles, but I think they're mostly even. So, I you know, and the 1.5-point spread kind of reflects that.
All right, Elliot, I'll see you a little bit later. As we have
that's right. You got a watch party. A
little watch party for Sixers. Sixers
Why don't
you
promote that for 10 minutes?
Well, Philly's Pirates as well. Big night down here at Wells Fargo Center. So you can check out. It's a City Connect night. Yep. So you can see where Elliot and I will be on our social medias. On the other side, though, Elliot
appreciates.
I don't know. You did lose your hat. On the other side, the man who was throwing out the first pitch tonight down at Citizens Bank Park is also the guy who threw the first pitch at Citizens Bank Park 20 years ago today. Randy Wolf is here at Chickies and Pete's. He'll join the show. Looking forward to talking to Randy and about the Phillies and everything else. So Randy Wolf coming up next here on the Afternoon Show, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Welcome back. It's the Afternoon Show live at Chickies and Pete's. Nothing goes better with Philly basketball, hockey, and baseball than Chickies and Pete's. Pre-game, in-game, or post-game online, chickiesandpete's.com. Jack Fritz and Ike Reese hanging out down here, obviously, at Chickies and Pete's. And now, we're just a privilege to bring on the man who threw out the first pitch at Citizens Bank Park as a starter, and now will be throwing out the first pitch tonight, the 20th year anniversary of the opening of Citizens Bank Park. Randy Wolf joined the show. How's it going, Randy?
It's going great. It's hard to believe, huh? 20 years?
Wow. Things have changed.
Unfortunately for the worst, right? For most of us. But yeah, it's amazing.
How's the wing feeling? Is it good to go?
It's a reason why it's retired. It's a wing. It's a dead wing. But not like it was all that live when I played anyway, but it's pretty dead wing now.
Well, I'll tell you, Randy, it's obviously a great honor having you back. You helped open up Citizens Bank Park, first pitch of that night. What was that like? What do you remember about that night and, I guess, what was surrounding the opening of this new stadium?
You know, it was a huge buildup because, you know, the last year, the Vet, you know, that was a landmark here in Philadelphia. It was one of those places that people loved it, loved to hate it, hated to love it. You know, they had all the ceremonies going back in 2003 to close it out. And then there was this big buildup for the new stadium, which was a beautiful stadium. I mean, amazing-looking stadium. And, you know, we get the privilege to throw the first game there. You're a little nervous. And it was a day that wasn't too dissimilar to today. It was a misty, cloudy. It was colder than today. And you kind of wondered if we're going to get the game in. But we got the game in. And, I remember it was a disappointing game. We, I think, lost like 4-1 or something like that. You know, that part was disappointing, but it was exciting to open up this ballpark, which, you know, you kind of felt was going to change things for the Phillies, and it ended up really making a big difference, not only for the team, but for the city as well.
So you and I, our careers sort of crossed paths when I got here in 98, you got here in 99, and we're both at the vet, right? We're both playing in the vet. We know about all the horror stories of playing on how tough it could be, but how it could be a home field advantage for us. But we can be honest, even as players here, I know we didn't enjoy playing on that turf at the vet. How was that like for you pitching there?
Oh, man, I couldn't imagine being tackled on that turf.
Oof. Concrete.
Yeah, it was tough. Yeah, I mean, back in the September days, the Eagles and the Phillies used to share that same bathroom over there, too.
Yeah. Yep.
But, yeah, it was, for me, you know, that was the stadium that I got my Major League debut in. I remember June 8th, 1999, the Phillies had an off day. I came in and I threw against the outfield wall because I was pitching the next game. And for somebody who's never played in the big leagues, you go to the vet and you walk around there. I mean, it's essentially the Taj Mahal for you at the time. I enjoyed the vet. I actually liked it. I liked pitching there. The mound was great. You know, one thing about AstroTurf is that there was no bad hops, so you didn't have to worry about that. But, you know, I enjoy the vet. You know, you don't realize the upgrade that Citizens Bank Park will bring, but yeah. At the time, it was great.
What was that first year of Citizens Bank Park like? You know, you guys obviously add Tomey in 2003, add, you know, Rollins is there, Utley came up in 2003, and you're ushering in a new era at a new ballpark. The crowds were much bigger. What was that first year at Citizens Bank Park kind of like?
Honestly, it was disappointing because there was a lot of high hopes with our team going into it. I believe we got Billy Wagner, and you know, we had a lot of positive things going into it, and we just really came up short for what the talent level we had on the team. But it was really exciting. Like I said, you could tell there was a tone change with the Phillies, and you know, it was time to invest in that organization, invest in the team. It started with the stadium. And it really made a lot of sense as far as the long game to really kind of entice free agents to come to Philadelphia, because it is a great baseball town, and now with this amazing stadium, it made it just a really great place to play.
What was it like playing under Larry Boa? I mean, obviously, he's intense, but you know, he's your first manager in the big leagues. What was it like playing under old Larry?
Okay, so I'm going to preface the story. In 2009, which was years after he was the manager of the Phillies, he was a coach with the Dodgers, who I played with. And him and I got along great. Larry Boa is one of the best baseball minds I've been around, knows the game really well. But from 2001 on, when he was a manager, he's an absolute psychopath. I love Larry. Him and I are, you know, we're buddies now. But back then, man, there was a couple times where the only thing separating us between blood or nothing was a desk. So it was a very interesting few years. He was very passionate, and I think that was very, very obvious.
Now, you had a long, outstanding career. You were here, drafted here, and we're with the Phillies through tough times. And right after you leave, they start the fortune started to turn. They win a World Series. You faced them in the playoffs. Plan for the organization. When you think back on your time here, pitching here, what are some of the things that, like, you hold near and dear to your heart?
I'll tell you what. It's the connections that the organization has with its players. And especially, I can't speak to how it is now, but I know when I played and for years afterwards, especially when David Montgomery was still here, the sense of family you really got with that organization, people would have lifetime jobs. I mean, from
yeah, look at Brazier.
I know. I mean, he has a job title of Director of Fun and Games, and that's lasted for over 20 years.
Just stealing money. Is it 30 years now? I mean, holy cow. Unbelievable. I mean,
talk about the David Blaine of jobs, huh? But but it really was just a great sense of community and family. And still, when I come back for Alumni Weekend or these events here, seeing the faces that you saw 20-plus years ago, is pretty cool. That sense really, you know, I played for seven different organizations, and you really don't get that sense in other organizations.
When you came up, J-Roll, I believe, was already here. Utley was slowly coming up. Howard eventually got here in 04. What was it like seeing those guys as young players and then watching them develop into, obviously, some of the pillars of this franchise?
Well, oddly enough, I was here before Jimmy. That's how old I am. So
nice.
I think Jimmy came up in 2000 or 2001. And, you know, there was a group of guys that were the touted prospects. And obviously Jimmy is one of them. Chase is one of them. And, you know, the one thing, you know, Chase came in and he was, you know, the Patrick Bateman of baseball. If you understand that reference, then you're a movie nerd like me. But
I don't, but it's I'm sure people do.
So there's a movie called American Psycho where Christian Bale played Patrick Bateman.
Yes! Now I know what you're talking about.
Chase Utley is the Patrick Bateman of baseball. And
it's a good movie, too.
It's a great movie. It's dark, but great, like Chase. So so Chase came in, and you could tell he had this intensity and drive that was really unique. I mean, considering I think his first hit was a grand slam, and he almost beat everybody to home plate when he hit it. And
well, then they tried to prank him after.
Yeah, exactly.
They tried to get him.
Yeah, Krucky, I think, tried to get him, right?
Oddly enough, it was over Gabe Kapler's head, who became the manager here.
That is, the irony is pretty thick.
Yeah, I'd say so.
But, and then Jimmy came up, and, you know, Jimmy didn't lack confidence, and he backed it up, though. And he was a great teammate, both of them great teammates, both very different personalities, but both brought so much. And then other guys that came later, like Cole, and you see Cole come up, and he was unique to watch because he was this young kid, came up, and you could tell he didn't understand why he wasn't striking out everybody in the big leagues.
Yeah.
And you see that kind of inner confidence. You know, you could see why he had such a great career.
Well, Randy, I'm curious, which fan group do you think is better? I mean, there's
question.
But hold on, the Padilla's Flotillas were a big one.
I mean, other than the, you know, them mispronouncing the word, number one, it's pronounced flotilla, and
Work.
The Wolf Pack is iconic. People still bring it up today.
You can, I mean, especially at the Vet 700 level. And this has nothing to do with me, but it was by far the best fan group in Philly. I mean, I would walk down the streets and people wouldn't say, like, my name. They'd say, hey, Wolf Pack, you know, and still to this day I get asked about it.
Yeah.
And not only, you know, were they a great fan group, but the group of guys that started it, great guys.
Do you remember the first night?
I do.
Yeah.
It was my third game in the big leagues against the Pirates, and I remember I had a good game, and it started off with like 2-3 guys there, and then as the game went on, people started gathering. That's how I knew if I was having a good game. By the 4th, 5th inning, if there's a big group over there at the 700 level, I'm having a good game. If there's like 3 or 4 people, oh man, my day's not going to be too long.
What was that like for you playing here? We always ask the guys that could come back their experience of playing here. What was that like for you playing in front of these fans?
I actually had a very good experience. I was treated really well by the fans. And again, I attribute a lot of that to the Wolfpack. I think because the fans really love those guys so much, and I think they had a good reason to. But I think that really kind of gave me some cushion as far as having some, you know, rough patches, and they was pretty forgiven by the fans. Also, the fans recognize players that really care and put a lot of effort into trying to do well. And, you know, and they kind of pick up on the guys that are kind of aloof to that. So I think they picked up that, you know, it was really important for me to perform. And if I didn't perform, it wasn't because I didn't care. It wasn't because I wasn't trying to or working hard. So I had a great experience here.
Still, you're a fan of the game, meaning you watch baseball. I know some players don't watch. Some guys aren't fans of the sport that they played. Are you a fan? You still watch?
I don't watch that much.
See?
I don't. oddly enough, like growing up, I played everything, but I was never like a big sports fan.
Right.
So, and plus, I you know, I'm an older dad. I waited till I retired to get married and have kids. So I have a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old.
Ooh, and, you got little ones at home.
I got, yeah. And I have, it's the hardest job I've ever had in my life. So, you know, you don't have time really to take in a lot of sports. But, I'll get on the MLB app and check on things and occasionally watch the MLB Network and watch some highlights. But, yeah, I follow me closely. I just don't have the time.
What's so funny is, you know, we brought up the Padilla's flotillas. You know,
thank you.
Say it correctly.
Thank you. We have the Wolf back. By the way, we need some fangers back. They're slowly working their way back, but not as great as back in the day. But what's so funny is that, you know, you guys were actually on the opposite end of one of the best moments in Philly's history. You know, like in that 09 NLCS, you pitched game four. Padilla goes game five. I'm curious, you know, obviously it was a loss for you guys, but what was it like kind of seeing Jimmy Rollins have that walk-off? And I know you're on the opposite side, but, I mean, it was the loudest stadium you think you've been in?
It was horrible to watch. watching your win just wash away. And it was really cool for me, to tell you the truth, because, you know, I grew up in L.A. playing a Dodger, being a Dodger and being in the NLCS against the team that brought me to the big leagues, have a huge history with. And, you know, if any team was going to beat us, that was going to be the team that would be settling for me. But just to watch the growth from 2004 to 2009, the place was a madhouse. And then it was just a monstrous squad. There was no, I mean, pitching against that lineup was just no fun at all. And, it was loud. When Jimmy hit that ball in the right center field gap, I mean, your heart sinks, and then it sinks even lower when that crowd is just, like, ringing in your ear. So I know it was a great special time for Philly. I know when they won it in 08, you know, I was happy for that, for the city, the organization, because if you're here for a few years and before 2008, you understood the longing that this city had to win any kind of championship. So to see that was really cool.
Yeah, it really was. Part of the reason why I was asking about you being a fan or an observer of the game is I just wanted to get your thoughts on this version of the Phillies team the last couple of years, World Series appearance, NLCS appearance. You got Bryce here, you got Trey, you got Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola. What do you think about the squad and sort of where they're headed in the future?
I mean, from what I've seen, I think that they're an extremely balanced team. Every conversation I've had with John Middleton, every time I've heard him talk about this team, the man has an extreme passion for winning. He wants to win, and he has the pockets to win. And with the leadership of Dave Dombrowski, it's hard for this team not to do well.
Yep.
And it's exciting. I think if you're a Philadelphia Philly fan, it's an extremely, extremely exciting time. I mean, it's a very tough division. You know, you have the Atlanta Braves, who are a great team as well. But the one thing that I think any fan can ask for is that their team has a legitimate chance to win, and the Phillies definitely have that.
Well, Randy, can't thank you enough for stopping by. Good luck tonight.
Thank you,
sir.
No pressure or anything.
You know what? I threw thousands and thousands of pitches that mattered.
Yeah.
And luckily, this one will stay in the ballpark, so that's a good thing.
That's good. That's right.
And hopefully the Wolfpack's there to honor you as well. So.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, that'll be pretty cool,
yeah,
too.
That'll be cool. That'll be good.
There's a rumor they will be, so
awesome.
That'll be cool.
Awesome. That'll be
great. Thank you, Randy. My pleasure, brother.
All right. Thank you so much,
Randy.
Take it easy.
There he is, Randy Wolf. Throwing out the first pitch tonight.
That's pretty cool, man. First of all, he being the pitcher for the opening of Citizens Bank Park.
Yes.
That's being selected to be that guy, because you know, like, that roster, that day's lineup, that's going down in the history books for the organization.
100%.
It's the first lineup in the history of the ballpark.
And everyone's going to remember.
Yep. So to get that start is pretty cool, and it's great that they can get him back here on the date that they're honoring it. This is the date, right?
Yep.
That
April
it opened.
12th.
So that's pretty cool.
April 12th, 2004. Cool. Bobby Abreu, the first hit and the first home run.
Oh, okay. Was it the same thing?
Same thing.
Oh, it's okay.
Same thing. So, should be a cool night down at the ballpark. And
got the new jerseys.
The City Connects are coming out tonight. Well, we got to get Wolfie in a City Connect jersey.
Oh, no. I thought about asking him that. I guess to sort of endorse the new jersey, I guess. But he pitched in the pinstripes, man.
I know. But it's City Connect night. City Connect night.
Well, the good thing is that the kids already have their jerseys.
They know the assignment.
Yes, they know the assignment. I would imagine he's probably going to have one on. And by the way, I have people are giving thumbs down on the new jersey. I like them.
I think they're fine.
I like them.
The hats are cool. I'm excited to see how they look on the field. It's going to be so weird.
You're right. I want to see what they look like tonight.
It's going to be so weird seeing the Phillies not in a traditional red.
Because at first glance, it looks like the Milwaukee Brewers.
Or the Union. But yeah.
Or the Union, yeah. Or the Union. But
we can't have them compared to a soccer team.
Pretty good, though.
Yeah.
I wish they had a white version of it. So this is the only ones they're doing. They're not doing a different color.
Nope.
Not yet. Just wait till they keep selling them. Then you do the other version.
Yeah, wait till it's continuing to make money on this one. So, I think it's so funny, though. It's like such a small thing. But in the 09 LCS, Wolf pitched game 4 and Padilla pitched game 5. Like, former Phillies that ushered
the things you remember.
Well, they came in the vet. They opened the open Citizens Bank Park. And
right.
Because I wish I could go back and be like, Padilla's pitching tonight? Like it would have been hilarious.
So how old were you? You were 13 in 09.
In 09, I was 15.
15? I thought you were 96.
94,
okay. 94.
No, 94.
Yeah, you just turned 30. What's wrong with me?
I don't know. Been asking that for years. 215-592-9494 is how you get in. We'll get back to all your phone calls on the other side.
Man, it was pretty cool.
Lot to get into. The good old veteran stories, the vet stories.
The vet stories, man. That's how I first met Kurt Schilling.
I know.
Thought he was a damn tight end.
I was waiting for him to say, the rat or whatever running through.
The rodents. The rodents running around.
I mean, if we asked him for his favorite vet story, it could take up the whole segment.
Yeah. It's a lot of those. Because when you start, you know what it is? When you start thinking about it, then other stuff pops in your head.
Yeah.
Like you start remembering. Like how ridiculous it was that while we're down in meetings, 6 or 7 of our cars got broken into, literally in the players' lot. How does that happen?
How does that happen?
There's security there. Now, could it have mattered if the security guard was like 80?
I would think so.
Could it matter that it may have been an inside job? I mean, literally. Seriously. We got old Otis. Anybody who's watched Martin, you know who I'm talking about. Otis, the security guard. He's basically securing all of our cars out there. And I mean, one day it was like 8 cars got broke into.
He had no.
He's on a random Tuesday in October.
He had no practice bubbles. He had a bubble.
Oh, no, we had a 40-yard practice 40 bubble.
40-yard practice bubble.
It wasn't even a 50-yard practice bubble.
I'm surprised. Did the showers work?
They did. Showers did work.
Sometimes.
Now, sometimes. Color of the water coming out of there. You got to be careful.
Yeah, a little rusty, I'm sure.
A little rusty in there a little bit.
I mean, there's a guy that lived in there. There was a jail.
That's the one thing I regret never seeing. The jail.
Yeah.
I never actually saw it.
It was perfect.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. I just got out of the hood. I wasn't looking for a jail cell. So, yeah, I wasn't. When they said it was one in the damn stadium, I'm like, what?
Where did what? I get drafted?
Yeah, what the hell? They had a courthouse and everything.
It's unbelievable.
Judge Seamus McCaffrey.
It's a perfect name for it, too.
It is.
It's the perfect name for it.
I was like, they literally got a courthouse in the stadium and a jail in the stadium?
It's the bet.
Oh, it was so great. Listen, when you don't know any better, you just don't know any better.
Yep. Now we got Citizens Bank Park at the Link.
Oh, listen, now we're living in plush estates now.
We've upgraded.
We got 5-star chefs. We got chefs making food for you.
The Twitter question today brought to you by Mark's Jewelers. It's engagement season. Shop the home team at Mark's Jewelers with diamond engagement rings for every budget online, marks-jewelers.com. We're live at Chickies and Pete's. Baseball's better at Chickies and Pete's. Pre-game, in-game, or post-game feast. Find a location near you online. ChickiesandPete's.com. Are you giving a clean slate to the Sixers? Some thoughts on the Phils. Plus, a little fake trade Friday. Been a while since we've done one of these. It involves a player.
Yeah, because last time we did this, all hell broke loose.
Well, it involves a player who might have been involved in that trade. Is it time to revisit it? Is it back on the table? Some news on him possibly being traded. Don't miss that. We'll get to all that coming up next on the Afternoon Show, Sports Radio 94 WIP.